Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melanie C. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, June 4th, 2019. And today we are reading from the Big Book. We are on page 30 in the chapter, More About Alcoholism. We're going to be unpacking paragraph 3 today, and that begins with, "We alcoholics are men and women," and ends with, "Get worse, never better." Today's readers are the 12 steps, Nan K, the 12 traditions, Cindy D, and reading the text today and support therein is John K, Elaine T. Greeting our newcomers after the recording ends, it will be Wendy B, and Leslie M will follow up with giving you some announcements at the end before we go our separate ways. The share ID numbers for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, that would be Monday, June 3rd, 2019, is 12986, 12,986. And then we had a meeting already this morning, and they have a share ID number for that one too, and that would be for the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting on Tuesday, June 4th, 2019, 12988, 12,988. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Nan K to please read the 12 steps of OA.
Hi, this is Nan K from Northern Michigan. Here are the 12 steps. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you. Yes.
Thanks very much, Nan K. I will now ask Cindy D to please read the 12 traditions of OA.
Good morning. This is Cindy D, gratefully recovered in Texas. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. Thanks for letting me be of service. I pass.
Thank you, Cindy D. Appreciate it. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to remute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And we are recording this meeting, so it is very helpful if you press star 1 rather than the mute button on your telephone to assure no interference with technology. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter, More About Alcoholism, on page 30, paragraph 3, and it begins with, we alcoholics are men and women, and ends with, gets worse, never better. And John Kay is going to open us up by reading that paragraph and sharing his experience. Hi, John. Good morning.
Hey, Mel. Good morning. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us have felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. Well, that's my story. You know, it's also interesting. They say lost the ability to control, not didn't have. You know, and in AA, in the beginning, that was based on stories, and they now can show scientifically there is an enzyme that burns out in alcoholics when they drink too much. You know, again, science is lagging behind things we know, but they're finding out more, and the same is true with the food. But, you know, for me and the food, I'm not sure I ever had control. Maybe when I was a baby, you know, although I was told I cried a lot as a kid, so maybe that's why I hear that back when I was a kid, the baby formula was, like, loaded with various sugars. You know, maybe I was just jonesing for sugar as a baby, you know, instead of crying as much as I was told I was a difficult baby. And I know by the time I got a little older, you know, I mean, now you're at the whim of your parents when you're a kid, but every spare nickel I got when I got to a certain age didn't go to buying toys. It was the candy, potato chips, and all that, you know. And I know that for me, this compulsive eater is never gonna regain control. And, you know, and it says here, you know, we felt at times we were regaining control, but such intervals usually brief were inevitably followed by less control. You know, to me, that's the siren song of relapse. It gives us the illusion of finding the solution, only to have it all crash down again, you know. And I always like to point out the thing where it says usually brief, but not always. In other words, it might be more than brief. I say that because sometimes I'll hear people at meetings talking about doing things wacky food-wise, but this doesn't sound right. And they'll swear to it at meetings, and they'll be telling people about it and how they should try that. And but it sounds odd. It sounds like something too good to be true. And I always ask that $64,000 question of them. And for how long have you been doing this? And you have me say, oh, 3 months, 6 months. And, you know, but that could just be a longer version of usually three. And then we're back, you know, to the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. How many times, you know, did I find that during that long relapse cycle I was on? You know, I'd fail at one half measure and then I'd try to do another. I'd try some wacky offshoot that I would convince myself that would work. And I don't have all the time to list them here. You know, things like, oh, I'll work the steps and then I'll get abstinent. I'll work on my conscious connection with God and then I'll get abstinent. You know, I'll eat a little of this. You know, everything, you know, every possible permutation that incorporated negotiation rather than surrender. That's what I kept trying. The reality was I wasn't actually suggesting these ideas to myself. My disease was. My disease got up every morning with one job to do, and that was to get me to kick the can down the road another day on surrendering and putting the food down. And the answer, even though I didn't want to hear it at the time, was simple. Did I ever have a way that worked? Yes. When I first came to OA and I surrendered and I went to any length, and you know, like any good addict, once I find something that works, I'm going to give it up and find something else. But there isn't. There isn't an easier, softer way. What I couldn't understand was that surrender, the being willing to give up, was the easier, softer way. If I wanted to be placed in a position of neutrality with the food, I have to be willing to give up all those foods with which I can't be neutral, and be willing to take some direction and get out of the driver's seat. Because I had a lifetime of being in my driver's seat and it never worked. I just drove the car into the ditch. Why do I want to give the keys back to the guy who drove him into the ditch? I needed to be willing to, you know, sort of step out, get a sponsor and take some direction. And then things got better. And as long as you got this broken brain out of the decision-making process. Anyway, with that, I'll pass.
Thanks so much, John K. So what do the directions in the big book in this particular paragraph mean to me? Excited to hear what your experience, strength, and hope is on that. It's open now for others to comment on that paragraph.
Shalom, Anna.
Gotcha. Freedom. Gotcha.
Lisa G.
Lisa G. and Wendy M.
Aaron M.
Aaron M, hi.
Hi.
Beatrice O.
Beatrice O, let's go with Paulina. Hi, KJ, we'll get you. Okay, let's go with that lineup. I have Shlomid Hanna, Freedom H, Lisa G, Wendy M, Aaron M, Beatrice O, and Kathy Jo P. Hi, Shlomid Hanna, you're up. You're 3 minutes.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you to the timekeeper. Thank you, everybody. And wow, thank you to Bill Wilson and the First 100 Alcoholics for the initial program and writing this amazing book. And I could comment on every single line in this paragraph, but I only have 3 minutes. So no real alcoholic ever recovers control over the drinking, over the eating, over the thinking. I was on an outreach call yesterday. I was actually doing a 10th step. And the person I was speaking to very wisely said, you know, not only are we powerless over the food, we're powerless over the thinking, over our thoughts. And I'm feeling very, very, very powerless over my thoughts today. Just in a place of real negativity. And I know that that's part of the disease. And I'm just reaching out to God and just, you know, trying to ask for help and just accepting that I'm powerless. And as I work this program, God will hopefully remove some of the negativity from me. But I also wanted to comment on the progressiveness of the disease, because I absolutely saw that 100%. I mean, when I became abstinent 11 and a half years ago, I never binged the way that I've been binging the last 2 months. I also was not a sugar binger. I didn't binge on sugar, and I didn't start binging on sugar. And my disease progressed to becoming a sugar binger. And I also never binged in the morning. I usually, you know, nighttime was my bad time. I had all day binges this time. That never happened before. So I see 11 and a half years of accumulation and progression of this disease. And I saw what that looked like. And it was pretty scary, to tell you the truth. I have a new respect for this disease and the seriousness of this disease. I know for a fact now that if I never accepted it before, and I was always a little on the fence of, will I die? I don't know if I'll die from this disease. It always sounded a little extreme to me. I know with absolute certainty that if I'm in this disease, God forbid, then I will die. I know that. It may not be tomorrow, but it will happen. And I saw that very, very, very clearly. So I'm grateful to be reminded of that today, grateful to be reminded of the progression and of my powerlessness, because ultimately, I do my part, but I have to remember that God really is the one that has the power, and God is the one who's releasing me from my disease and also from my negative thoughts. And I'm grateful to be reminded that I have a program and I do have a higher power that I can lean into. So thank you. I'll pass.
Thanks, Shlomidhana. Freedom, you're next, and then Lisa G. will come after you.
Hi, thank you for all those who do service. I'm very thankful for this meeting. At 5 years old, I was looking for love in all the wrong places my whole life. My mom threatened to call CPS if I didn't behave. I would sneak into the cupboards and open up cake mixes and eat them. I ate dog food. I even ate foot powder, and she told me if I didn't hold still after she called poison control, then I would explode. To be honest, a serial killer would have more mercy than my mom was more of a... like a cat and mouse type thing, to where she would just torture me. At least she would never end my misery, where at least other things couldn't, at least a serial killer to end somebody's misery, put them out of their suffering. But anyhow, I grew up with her. She was sociopathic, didn't have any feelings. But I ate looking for love in food. I feel like I was looking for love in all the wrong places with food. But then this program, I found this program because I was eating myself to death, actually. I was one step away from death. And then this 12-step program of OA saved my life and taught me that God loves people just as they are, that there are people that have love and that do love me just as I am. And it really has made a difference being abstinent now. I feel so much better in so many ways, where before the food was just owning me. It was my everything. The food was like controlling my entire life. It was the only way I could ever feel good in life was by eating something. But it was very, very momentarily. It didn't last long. It was very short, temporary fix. It's just like alcohol or any other drug. It's just a short fix. But it really caused a lot of harm in my life. But thankfully to this program, I'm healing. I'm learning things that I should have learned as a child that I never learned. I'm learning to take care of myself. I'm learning self-love, self-care, and that, you know what? There are people out there that are kind. Not everybody out there is no feelings. There's people with feelings, because I used to always get shot down because I had feelings. And I wish sometimes I didn't have feelings, because then it wouldn't hurt so bad. And now I'm realizing that, there's other people out there that are kind, that are caring, that are trying this program, and that this program does work. I'm seeing it every day when I listen on this phone. So with that, I'll mute. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Freedom H. Lisa G., you're next, and then Wendy M. will come after you.
Good morning, it's Lisa G. from Texas. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And then the next sentence, well, this whole paragraph, but we are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. You know, I didn't know that overeating was an illness. And when I hear you guys talk about alcoholic foods and alcoholic behaviors, at first I thought it was really weird because, wait a minute, we're food addicts, we're not alcoholics. But I get it now that it is alcoholic. It's something that has a grip on me that I had no idea had a grip on me. And I don't know if I was a compulsive overeater as a child or as a young adult, but I knew that I was trying to numb out feelings by doing drugs in my 20s and my 30s. And I didn't start gaining weight till my 30s. And I joined Weight Watchers and quickly lost the 25 pounds I had gained. And I just felt on top of the world and like I could do anything. And I was so proud of myself. And slowly over time, I gained it back plus. And I still didn't realize what was going on. I didn't realize that this was something that I needed to numb my feelings out. And the more that I used either marijuana or food to numb out my feelings, the heavier I got, the moral, the demoralization, not only demoralizations, but I loathed myself. I loathed myself, which would make me want to eat again because that's the only thing that made me feel better. When I stopped doing drugs in my late 30s, the food really took off. And I still didn't get it. I still didn't get it. I get it now. I get it. You know, I was in another food program for 11 years, and I, you know, lost a bunch of weight, felt great about myself. Everything was wonderful. And then in the last couple of years, I started gaining weight back, and I wasn't off my food plan. So all of a sudden, grip of the disease again. You know, I thought I'd kind of, you know, just follow my food plan, do what my sponsor says. Life is great. Nope. Once I started gaining weight back again, life wasn't so great anymore. So I see, you know, this is alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Lisa G. Wendy M., you're next, and then Aaron will follow you.
Yes, good morning. Wendy M. in Boulder, Colorado. Grateful to be on the line. And Mel, thanks for your service, always. So one of my favorite words is control, and I didn't even know that the word existed until I joined Overeaters Anonymous and frankly started setting this book about 3 years ago. And the word control shows up 4 times. So, you know, it's clearly an important word. And it's an important word to me because I binge on control, right? Like, control is my direction. Like when I'm, life is unmanageable, when I'm in fear, when I'm in self-reliance, when I'm running the show, I am trying to control something outside of myself and try to control myself and try to control the food. And it's exhausting. Controlling things is absolutely exhausting. And the thing that's so important to me about this disease and about this book that's divinely inspired and is that God makes it possible for us to get like so far down the road. Like it has to be so bad, right, that that I'll finally be convinced that I have to let go of control. And the minute I let go of control, I get grace. I get God. God's like cheering me on. Yes, let it go. Let it go. Whatever it is that I'm trying to control, because it never works. Whatever I'm trying to control, it never works, including, of course, the food. You know, and it's a relief. Thank God. This disease is the only thing that will convince me. You will not convince me to stop eating or stop trying to control people, places, and things. You can't do that for me, right? The disease, it has to be bad enough, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And that's exactly my experience with this disease and other addictions that I have. You know, and God, again, makes it so. He makes it that it's going to get bad enough. Thank God it got bad enough, because if it didn't and I could kind of control things, that would not work. That's 1 foot in, 1 foot out. 1 foot in my program, 1 foot in God's program. You know, and that won't work out at all, you know. And all of this is our thinking, step one. You know, I think I've got this under control. I've got a normal body size right now, right? So I've got this. I'm good to go, God. Really, I don't need you until much later. I'm good to go. I can control things still. But thank God it's exhausting. It's demoralizing. It's awful, right? It has to get awful enough, right? Nobody can convince me. And it is. It's just our thinking. I used to think that my disease was in my thighs. It's not in my thighs. It's between my ears, you know. And anytime I'm trying to control, it gets itchy and scratchy. It's not comfortable. And when I surrender the control, when I say, you know what, God, I'm powerless over this malady, over this spiritual malady, over this disease, and I need you. And God's the only power that can, you know, help me surrender, that can bring me grace. And the hope I give to others is by letting go of control, you will feel the grace and the ease. Thank you. I pass.
Thanks, Wendy M. Aaron M., you're up, and then Beatrice O. will follow you.
Hi, this is Aaron M., and I'm in Illinois. This is my first time speaking. I'm a little bit nervous, so bear with me, and I'm kind of new to the program. But when I think about how I've tried to control my habits and my eating over time, things did worsen and progress. I'm in my 50s now, so I've had a lot of, I got some time behind me to look back and kind of review my behaviors and how things are, you know, I can look back and see how things were when I was younger and how they are now. I was in my 20s, early 30s, and, you know, the office would bring in some sweets in the morning, you know, the pastries, and I could care less about them almost, you know. I'd go to the vending machine and get a little candy bar on my break, and I'd eat maybe half of it, and, you know, one of my coworkers one time mentioned, why would you only eat half your candy bar? And I'd say, because that's all I wanted, just a little bite or two. And, you know, now I'm to the point where I eat bags of candy, you know. What else I've noticed that I wanted to share about my behaviors is, like, I can't, when I'm in my addiction of this, of the food and the sweets. It's more the sweets. When I was younger, I just overate at my meals. Now I'd want to skip meals and just eat the sugar. But I've noticed that when I'm binging, let's say, I'm not really enjoying what I'm having at the moment, because I'm thinking about my next, you know, bite or my next, you know, I'm eating this right now, but I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm going to have another one and I'm going to have that one or, you know, if I, this, my next, you know, slice off the cake is going to taste even better because it's got, you know, more chocolate icing on it or something. So I'll wrap it up. So I can't even enjoy the moment that I'm having what I'm having because I'm thinking about the next thing that I'm going to have, and I find that to be kind of particular in when I'm evaluating myself and my habits. And thank you for letting me share, and I appreciate everyone on this phone line, and thank you. I'll pass.
Aaron M., thank you. Beatrice O., you're next, and then Kathy Jo P. will follow you.
Good morning. This is Beatrice O from the Bay Area, California. So the incomprehensible demoralization. So when I was in the food, I would forget that, you know, a couple days ago I was in incomprehensible demoralization. That was like, you know, it was vague. I remember that I was demoralized and feeling terrible, but it was really vague. In fact, that thought would even disappear once I was looking at what I was ready to start eating. And the disease, this addiction does get worse, not better. And I just wanted to piggyback over what someone said, like kicking the can down the road. For me at one time, you know, I got comfortable being uncomfortable, if that makes any sense. I got used to being miserable. And the only time that I was ready to surrender, I had to be, quote, fat enough. You know, when I got to a certain weight, then I would surrender. And I did that over and over and over. Some people say, well, when did you get abstinent? What made you abstinent? And I always, you know, I couldn't put my finger on it, but, or accurately articulate what it was. And I know that part of it was, well, I wasn't fat enough. Or I was, when I got to a point where, you know, I just couldn't stop eating and I was tipping the scales at over 200, then I'll do something about it. So there's a mental illness. It's called anosognosia. And it's a hard word, but it's beyond denial. It's thinking that I don't have enough consciousness and I have a lack of insight to even think that I have an addiction or a mental illness. It's beyond denial. I went on a trip this last week, and the person I went to see doesn't believe that they have an illness. Well, they know they have an illness, but they don't think that their illness warrants dialectical behavior training and other and CBT and all the necessary
time
classes. Anyway, I just wanted to say there is something worse than denial, and that's believing that, you know, you're not in denial about your addiction. Anyway, I'm grateful to be here sober. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks so much. The next person up will be Kathy Jo P., but just before you go, Kathy Jo, I wanted to let folks know that there's going to be time for a few more to comment on the paragraph in our study today, and that paragraph is on page 30 of your big book in the chapter 3, More About Alcoholism. Paragraph 3 starts with, we alcoholics are men and women, and ends with, we get worse, never better. So you might want to prepare for that over the course of these next 3 minutes. Hi, Kathy Jo, good morning. It is your turn.
Good morning, my people, and Melanie, thank you for your service. This is Kathy Jo P., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minneapolis. And I like to start by saying in 1976, I did Weight Watchers, and I followed it perfectly for 9 months. And I remember people being amazed by my willpower, and I really did believe that I had this food thing licked. And I got to my goal weight, and I started the maintenance program, and within 3 days, I was off to the races, back into the food. And I literally searched for that magnificent willpower that I was so blessed with and able to diet for the next 38 years. And I have to say, I never found it. And I did a few years in OA in the 80s, and I did put down sugar, and I worked these steps haphazardly. And then I left the rooms for 22 years. And I, most days, didn't even try to control this food thing. And I believe that's because I was completely defeated and devastated. I knew that I couldn't even put together a day most days. And every once in a while, I would try and I would get, you know, a few days of Weight Watchers and lose a little bit of weight. For my wedding, I was tipping the scales about 297. And man, was I happy when I went down the aisle at 264. But literally, right at my honeymoon, I was back to the races again. And I spent the next 22 years weighing over 300 pounds. And again, I didn't even try. And I think it's because A, I knew I couldn't do it. And B, I needed that food because I did not have a solution. I did not have these steps. I did not have the spiritual toolkit. I was not doing the we of this program. I was doing the I, and I was trying to do this thing by myself, and I was defeated beyond belief, physically, emotionally, morally, spiritually. I was a mess, and I did not come into these rooms gracefully coming back. I came back kicking and screaming and wanting to prove that there's some way I could do this without giving up sugar. And I'm one of the people that had to be hospitalized, and I ended up getting off sugar. But I still played. I still kept alcoholic foods, and I still tried to make this work because I needed that food still. And I can't tell you exactly how I got to a place of being willing and teachable. But thank God I did. And today I can tell you I have given up all of my alcoholic foods. I'm down 115 pounds. And now what I'm working on a day at a time is knowing that I'm defeated with my character defects, going to God humbly every day, and you people that make it the we, and saying, I can't do this thing. Help me, God. Help me, people. And I'm getting more free every day. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy Jo P. The lines are now open for a few more minutes. A few more names.
Kim?
Did I hear Kim?
Lisa.
Lisa.
Yes, Kathy.
And then I hear Lance. And did I hear Ida?
Yes. Elaine T.
Okay.
And Sue B.
Patty T. Let's go with that four and see what we have with time, and then we can come back for another round. So I have Kim. Don't have the first initial of your last name. I have Lance L, Ida A, and Patty T. Let's go with that. Thanks so
I'm
much.
Sorry.
Everyone else, press star one, please.
Did,
go ahead, Kim.
I wasn't sure if you started with me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is such a hard-hitting paragraph, and I'm really relating to what everybody is sharing about. But for me, it's also important to remember that this progression of my disease and this control and this pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, to me, it's not only about food. I faded away from the rooms for about, 6-7 years because I wasn't really finding the recovery that I wanted and blah, blah, blah. And what brought me back was not food, but my defects, because I found that my defects were spiraling out of control and I was hitting a bottom with them. And I didn't see it that way at the time. I didn't realize that I was miserable because of my defects. I knew I was miserable. I knew I was just an angry, miserable bitch, and I had no reason to be that way. And I didn't go back to OA right away. I went to therapy because I had to figure out, well, why are these things happening in my life? Why do people not like me? Why am I losing friends? Why this? Why that? And over time, my therapist, who was very like 12-step oriented, convinced me to go back to OA. I'm making it a short story. And this is what I've come to realize, that my self-will run riot has gotten so bad that it just brought me really to my knees, because I saw, and this is not to say that my food was good or that my weight has been good, none of that. I mean, my food's not been good, neither is my weight, but I just wanted to focus on how, you know, I know for me, I use food for ease and comfort, even though it doesn't feel easy or comfortable. I apparently use it for ease and comfort. That's been my solution that doesn't work. And what's been leading me to the food is just this incredible selfishness and resentment, which is selfishness, and need to control, which is selfishness, and fear, and my emotional dishonesty, which I'm working with a sponsor now who is just really helping me see how deep my defects run and all of the things that they have done to me. So, you know, typically when I think of what this disease has done to me, I think of my body image and my shame and, you know, all the things that are food related. But I need to remember that it's not about that. You know, the big book tells us it really has nothing to do with food or alcohol. It's all of, you know, the 100 manifestations of self, or however it is that they phrase it. So I just wanted to, you know, I guess hear myself. Thanks. I just want to hear myself speak on this so I remember to give that up to my higher power as well. Thank you so much for letting me share, I pass.
Hey, Kim, before you take off, would you give me the first letter of your last name, please?
A, like apple?
Thanks, I got it now. Thank you very
okay.
much, and thanks for your
Thank
share
you.
Today. Mm-hmm. Lance L., you're next, and then Ida A. will follow you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lance L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from California. And, man, this just spells out every diet that I ever jumped on. You know, as I thought about it, right before I started, and usually it was a Monday morning that I would start, I'd use the weekend to just, you know, do my dope as hard as possible, and then Monday morning I would start, and throughout that weekend...
That sounds like shit. What are you doing here?
You done? Okay. Throughout that weekend, I felt that this was going to be the answer, that I could regain control. And, you know, our book tells us right here that we know that no real alcoholic ever regains control. You see, that ever word is italicized. You know, there's a reason for that. Okay, we're putting emphasis on that word. And, you know, it's amazing because the first couple meals of each diet, it would be like, I'm here, I finally found it, I finally found the answer. And within hours, sometimes it took days, but usually it was within hours, I'd be back to my regular way of eating. And I thought I was regaining control. And it was always brief. And just like Bill Wilson outlined in his story, that, you know, at first he was disgusted by people wanting to take their own lives. He thought it was disgusting. He was not there. Then, as his disease progressively got worse, he started to question, should I kill myself now? No, not now. I won't do it now. Then he found himself swaying in front of an open window, contemplating this thing. Then he dragged the mattress down onto the bottom floor, right? So this progression happens. You know, the doctor's opinion states that we are out of control. So the longer we are alive, the worse it gets, and that means for me that the more relief I need. So each and every day, the more I pour into my recovery program, the more recovered I am. But I can't stay recovered today based on the work that I did yesterday. I wake up with this illness. You know, I'm defeated from the moment I wake up, because I wake up with this illness. I am alcoholic. You know, the demoralization, that has a lot to do with confusion for me and feeling lost.
Time.
And you know, I found myself in that cycle for so long that I wanted as well. I wanted to end it. And this book has really changed the way I think. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you very much, Lance. We have two more folks to share today, and we have about 4 minutes. So if Ida and Patty could take about two and a half minutes at the most each, that would be very appreciated. Hi, Ida, you're up first.
Thanks, Melanie. Thanks, everybody. Ida A. here, grateful compulsive overeater in Northern British Columbia. And I focused on that. We learned no real compulsive overeater ever recovers control. We learned we're in the grips of a progressive illness. We learned we get worse, never better. But my problem was I have a disease of forgetting. So I didn't learn. And if I think I learned at the moment, I didn't retain the knowledge. Well, I didn't retain the knowledge when confronted with, like, Hagen-Dazs, Ben and Jerry, fill in the blank. I didn't retain it. I found my God, and my God was food. So I had a progressive mental twist, a progressive allergy, a progressive disease of forgetting. And it does get worse. I did not learn. I blamed. I judged. I talked the problem, not solution. I talked poor me. But I took no responsibility by surrendering. So I didn't focus on what could help me. My toolbox had food, nothing else. Food was my God of choice. And so today, God bless the AA Big Book. God bless Bill. God bless all the people that came before me. God bless all of you for showing me a path that has weight and depth and that has hope. Because selfish, self-absorbed, self-sabotaging Ida is changing. These program principles are coming alive on the other side of my alcoholic foods, regardless of the stressors in my life. I did not know that was possible. So thank you. I'm richly blessed, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Ida. And Patty T., it's your turn.
Okay. Hi. Hi, everybody. It's Patty T. from Southern California. Thank you so much, Mel, for your service. And oh, my gosh, oh, my goodness, these shares have just been magnificent this morning. Okay, so as a result of being in this fellowship over the last year, I can say that I know today that no real alcoholic ever recovers control, because I am a real alcoholic with food. I am a real compulsive eater, laxative, and an enema bulimic. That's who I am. I'm real, okay? And I can never recover control of my eating. The gift is that a higher power has taken hold of me, of my behavior through the practice of these steps. And when I think that I have not had diet soda or even popcorn in over a year, my mind is blown. Now, popcorn was not a compulsive food for me. It was not a binge food, but it was a gateway food. It was that I can get away with this. I can control my food. It gave me the idea that I could control sugar, that I could control pasta, that I could control any other food, right? And today, I don't know. I am so grateful that I understand what a progressive disease this is. And I think it has to do with 6 years of chronic relapse. I think it has to do with that experience. And I do suffer from the disease of amnesia, absolutely. But today, I don't know. It's because I have all of you on this line to remind me that I am not alone. And when I hear you share, I hear my own experience. Thanks for letting me share.
Can't hear you, Melanie.
Oh, thanks so much, Sherry KB. Thanks so much, Patty. for your share, and that does close us out for this particular portion of our sharing meeting. And we're going to close out the recording by moving on with saying the Serenity Prayer. Thanks, everyone, for your service today. So, Elaine T., would you please read from the Big Book on page 164? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, thanks, Sherry. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.